is not like TV, only better.
Television! Teacher! Mother!
Secret lover.
What, that's it? That's your movie?
Well, I said that I had an idea for a movie.
Hey there, folks. This is Screen Watching. It's our weekly deep dive into the movies and the TV shows that have been populating our screens. My name's Dan Barrow. I'm a TV guy. I'm joined by Simon Foster. He's a movie guy. Somehow, despite these two vastly different interests, we make this podcast work. Folks, we've got a very big show. I'm going to give you the rundown before I introduce Simon Foster. I'm telling you about some of the big titles. And is there a bigger title in the world right now than a new Brooke Shields TV movie, Mother of the Bride? I mean, I challenge you to find something more, not only just audience enrapturing, okay, but also just artistically nourishing. Like, I challenge you to find something more than that. We're going to talk about The Way My Way. It's a movie which Simon explained to me what it was a second ago, and I just fell asleep. But he's promising it's going to be more interesting than what he told me a moment ago. For some reason, Simon's talking about a children's TV series, Doctor Who. There's going to be a bit of John Mulaney talk. There'll be a bit of a look back at a little TV show called The Daily Show. What's that about? There's a thing called Arc. We've got The Three Musketeers, D'Artagnan. We've got everything happening here. Also, there's going to be a little bit of a mention of a TV series about podcasters. Look, I mean, is this too much gazing into the navel? We'll find out. Folks, big dev screen watching, and the only way we really get into this is for me to throw to my co-host and say, Simon Foster, good morning, good afternoon, good night. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Daniel Barrett. Good morning, screen watchers here in Australia and around the world. Very exciting week for me. You know I love my movie follies, and this week at the Cannes Film Festival, one of the great big follies of the year premiered, Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis. It is the film I am most excited about seeing going
forward. Wait, sorry, Simon, I'm getting a message from the screen watching fact-checking team. They have actually asked me for legal reasons to point out that it is not a folly as you haven't seen the movie yet, and it may actually be artistically sound and also a commercial success. So we don't know it's a folly yet. So please, if you can issue the correction, we'll then continue on to the podcast.
Follies can be both those things. You know my thoughts on follies. I'm a huge folly fan. And Megalopolis is shaping up as one of the great follies of all time. Francis Ford Coppola does folly very well. He's done it in the past. And Megalopolis has all the hallmarks of a great Francis folly. So,
Excuse me, Simon. Simon, sorry, I'm getting a message back from the fact team again. They've actually asked you to take a look at the Oxford Dictionary, where the definition of folly is lack of good sense and foolishness. And again, we don't actually know that's true. He may just be a visionary, and you don't quite know that yet. Also, I'm hearing the phrases Apocalypse Now, I'm hearing The Godfathers Part 1 and 2, and Jack. Okay, so
I'm hearing One From the Heart. I'm hearing, look, he does folly. So I'm very excited. It looks amazing. It sounds crazy. So apparently through the week it was afforded a global IMAX release. IMAX are getting behind it as kind of a distributor of some kind to make sure it's seen on the biggest screens everywhere. So that's a good thing. But it's still awaiting distribution partners all around the world, including Australia. So you're here on All Megalopolis Podcasting. I'll be keeping us up to date on what goes on there. But it's been a big week of movies with the Cannes Film Festival going on and with this thing called My Way, The Way in cinemas.
You said big week of movies. The only movie I've heard about is Megalopolis. And frankly, it's the only movie I care to hear about for the rest of this year.
Well, exactly right. Well, I'll be bringing us all the news. So let's kick things off with a review segment.
It stinks.
All right, guys, let's talk about the biggest movie of the last 12 months in all of our hearts and minds, and maybe not quite financially, but it came pretty close. It was a pretty strong contender. I'd like to talk to you about a little movie called Sydney Sweeney's Anyone But You. Simon, I believe you're a bit of a fan of that movie, right?
Where are you going with this? I'm not a fan of the film at all. I'm a fan of Sydney Sweeney, and I'm glad it made a lot of money. But no, I'm not a fan of the film at all. Why are we talking about this film?
Well, the reason I talk about Anyone But You is because there were certain people in the world, I believe you were one of them, who, sorry to use a little bit of language here, shit on that movie. And the reality is, you watch that movie, which was about a destination wedding to Australia, and people are like, oh, it's just not very good. It's kind of terrible. Yeah, people who are saying that don't really appreciate how bad that movie scenario could have gone. At which point, I'd like to introduce you to the new Netflix TV movie starring Brooke Shields. It's called Mother of the Bride. Here's the blurb, and then we're going to watch a clip. Stunned by her daughter's bombshell wedding announcement, Lana soon faces another shock. The groom's father is the man who broke her heart years ago. Oh my God, show us more.
This is my Aunt Janice.
And you must be the mother of the... Lana?
Hello. I mean, hello.
Could someone please explain what's going on?
Once upon a time, your father and Emma's mother dated in college. Wait, what?
No, I mean, it wasn't serious.
Are you serious?
Simon, it is hard watching this movie and not thinking about anyone but you, but also the many, many, many destination wedding rom-coms that we've seen over the year. It is well-trod. And as I watched this, there are two films that were very much ringing heavily in my ears. One, it was Anyone But You. And the only reason for that one specifically was just because it's probably the latest sort of big holiday romance destination film. But also there was just that narrative about people complaining about, oh, it's just such a terrible movie. And it was fine. I thought it was amiable enough. Okay. It is a genre that is peppered with some pretty terrible entries. And when you watch this one, you actually remember how bad this can be as a genre. The other one that was really sort of coming to mind was the Australian, actually, why are both of my things here Australian filmed? There was the George Clooney, Julia Roberts film, which I want to say was called Ticket to Paradise.
You can say that if you like. It was definitely called that.
Yeah, okay, cool. Confirm. So there was that one as well, which was about the mother and father of the bride who had been estranged and, you know, came together at this destination wedding. Both of them have very sort of similar, I wouldn't say sort of DNA into this one because it's not really connected at all, but just, you know, similar approaches to things. What you've got here is Brooke Shields, who, look, I haven't seen Brooke Shields on screen for some time. As far as I'm concerned, she'll always be Suddenly Susan. She'll always be that guest jeans ad. She'll always be the, sorry, I was trying to like, I was going to have a very woke way to talk about her role in Blue Lagoon, because let's just say that I think her inclusion in that film is probably a little bit gross, as is pretty much the first third of her career generally.
Yeah, as I was going to say, pretty
as
baby.
As a pre-adult.
Pretty baby, guest jeans, Blue Lagoon, Endless Love, and then she struggled to make any kind of transition to serious adult acting roles.
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one because I think when we sort of look back at Brooke Shields, we say, oh, you know, sort of teen star who didn't really transition to her adult career. But she kind of did. Like, she was the star of one of the biggest TV shows on NBC for a couple of years there in a form of Susan. But I'd say that she never really found, like, anything to move on to from that. So she sort of had her on-ramp, but she just never really maximized her career there. And I'm sure there's probably
Famous for being Brooke Shields rather than famous for any sort of specific role.
Yeah, look, that's probably fair. Yeah, so anyway, you cut to this, and she's suddenly one of the big selling points of this movie. And as far as the sort of actual cast goes, like, it's a not terrible cast that we're looking at here. So you've got Brooke Shields as the mother, and she's sort of a dominating alpha business leader slash scientist. One of the big problems with this movie is that, and I'll come back to the cast in a moment, one of the big problems with this movie is that it sort of scripts these ideas and it works on that Perd Hapley style idea of, oh, I'm laughing because it's the cadence of a joke. And it's not so much that there's the cadence of jokes here, but there's the cadence of the language of the rom-com. Okay. Mm. But the problem is that they never really follow through on some of the ideas set up. So the film opens with Miranda Cosgrove, another cast member of this one, essentially being proposed to by her husband, a guy named Sean Teal, who I don't really know. But anyway, she's there and she's being proposed to. She says yes. It's a very beautiful moment in a way that a terrible rom-com stages a proposal. Simon, I don't know about you, but a proposal isn't actually something where you come into a restaurant late at night and there's flowers everywhere and a staff there ready to clap and applaud and a small band ready to play after she says yes. The way a wedding proposal is supposed to happen is it happens at a pub, usually about 2:30 in the morning, okay, on the way home, and you're sort of stumbling around going, I guess so. When's this happening? Like, that's how it happens.
Look, it's true. I had to chase my wife across the paddock, and I tackled her, and I put the ring on her finger forcibly, and I dragged her back to the cave, caveman style. So, yeah, I know exactly how a proposal should go,
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, you have to deal with this as a bit of a flavor of the rom-com. But as the proposal is interrupted by Miranda Cosgrove's character, Emma, she's like, oh my God, how am I going to get my mother on board with this? Okay, and so you're suddenly thinking, oh, well, clearly the mother's going to be a really interesting sort of character here. How are we going to play with this? Cut to the next scene, and it's her visiting her mum back in the US because they're in London or something, I think. cuts back to the US, she walks in, and it's like, oh, mum. And then like 2 minutes later, it's like, I'm getting married. And then the mother's a bit awkward about it. And then 30 seconds later, it's all fine. They're off to this wedding. Like, it's
for
something which is introduced as this big sort of thing that's going to be a massive concern. Like, it's addressed and taken care of in a fairly matter-of-fact way with the mother showing a modicum of concern, okay? But, like, it's not a big deal. And that really sets the tone of this movie, which is that they keep setting up these very big ideas and then doing absolutely nothing with them. So they get to this island resort where they've got to have this very fancy wedding, which is being paid for as a bit of spawn con because the Miranda Cosgrove character is an influencer. And none of that makes any sense when you watch the film either, but that's neither here nor there. We meet the father of the groom. It's played by Benjamin Bratt, who we don't really see in movies a lot, but, you know, suddenly a very well-known TV presence for many, many, many years on Law & Order. Okay, sure. And one of the problems, and I'm literally right now just trying to look how old Benjamin Bratt is. He is a 60-year-old man.
60-ish, okay? I would say, yeah.
Yeah, and so you watch this, and part of the, I wouldn't call it necessarily like a plot, but it's certainly heavily emphasized in this one, is that he is physically just completely jacked, okay? You see him without his shirt on. Without his pants on in one scene, nothing untoward, like it's all, you know, very safe to watch with your mum, okay? But, like, he is just physically, like, really just uncomfortable look at, okay? Like, it is, and you sort of look at this and it's like, I just kind of wish that they hadn't done that. I don't know if he did that for this movie or if he's just generally a very jacked guy.
Oh, he's a jacked man. He's famous for having one of the best bods in Hollywood for an old fella. So, yeah, you're right. Well, not old.
Okay. Well, I don't know how famous that is. But then also you've got Chad Michael Murray, people would know from, what was he in, One Tree Hill? I know he did a season on Gilmore Girls. I'm not sure. Yeah. He was, you know, former teen star. Yeah, One Tree Hill, which he was apparently in for 9 years. Madness.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's in that, and he's basically got exactly the same body as Benjamin Bratt, and both of them are just these hard-body dudes that are a bit hard to really watch. And one of the plot points of Chad Michael Murray's character is that he's a fellow doctor as well and sees the Brooke Shields character, Lana, as she's doing yoga, as is something that happens on holiday retreats all the time in movies, and I don't know if that really happens in real life. Okay, where most of the time you're just sitting at a bar is my experience, but that's neither here nor there. But, like, he's there looking across the room and is like, oh, Brooke Shields, you're this amazing-looking woman. I must be with you. All with his eyes. Didn't really verbalize this. Okay, but that's what's being sort of led there. But the thing is that Brooke Shields, look, I'm trying to be as polite about this as possible. She's not the Brooke Shields of yesteryear. Okay, like, you know, I mean, she's not like a, you know, a beast of a lady, but also she's standing there doing yoga right next to Rachel Harris. Dad. Well, no. She's standing there next to Rachel Harris, okay? And Rachel Harris, I don't know if you're familiar with Rachel Harris, but she's one of these actors who's played the best friend in so many movies over the years. Like, she has never had the career that she really deserves because Rachel Harris is legitimately just one of the great sort of character actors in like that sort of low stakes sort of rom-com kind of a world where she should have been a much bigger star. Like, she should have had a moment to break out, and it never really happened for her.
Second Netflix movie in a row for her. She was in Unfrosted a couple of weeks ago with the wife of Jerry Seinfeld. So yes, I know Rachel Harris. Yeah.
But like, she's had also the kind of same sort of look, which is she's a blonde-haired lady with big black-rimmed glasses, and she's very funny. She can deliver a line, and she's the one that's given a lot of the Perd Happily cadence of a joke jokes that exist throughout this movie. Anyway, she's, you know, the closest thing that this movie has to being fun. But also Rachel Harris, who's certainly not a young woman by any means at this point either. I think she's late 50s at this point. She's a legitimately just very attractive woman who, I don't know, I kind of think that if Rachel Harris is standing next to Brooke Shields, it's not Brooke Shields getting attention, it'd be Rachel Harris. But by just the notion of this being a movie where Brooke Shields is the main draw in this one, there's just this improbable, like, interest in her from afar, which just doesn't make any sense. It's very bizarre, and that's the thing with this movie. not a lot of it makes very much sense at all. If you are looking for a incredibly generic rom-com on Netflix, I feel you can do better than this one. That said, if you kind of want to see what Brooke Shields is up to, and I suspect there's a lot of people that do, because this movie has performed very well for Netflix this last week on what I'm sure is not much of a budget, look, you know, go for it. You're probably going to have a... You're not going to have a bad time. You're just going to have a bit of a nothing time on the couch.
Big plus for me, or two big pluses. Miranda Cosgrove is a very talented young comedian, and I'm keen to see where she goes as a young
big iCarly fan.
I am an iCarly fan. Yeah, I watched iCarly back in the day when it was when the daughters were little and it was part of the TV watching environment. But the other big plus for me is Mark Waters directing, who a decade ago, maybe nearly two decades ago, it was the man behind Mean Girls and had a series of fairly successful comedies. He's got a sly touch with his comedy gifts, and he should be able to direct just about anybody to certainly a watchable romantic comedy situation. So I'm keen to see what he can do with this material.
Okay, so one of his early sort of breakout films, it may have been his first film, I'm not quite sure, was House of Yes, which is a Parker Posey sort of slightly indie-ish film from the late 90s.
Sure is.
From there, he sort of spun that off into a career where, as you mentioned, it's films like Mean Girls, he helmed Freaky Friday, there was the Spiderwick Chronicles, Just Like Heaven, Mr. Popper's Penguins, Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, he's all that. We are talking about a guy who is a journeyman director who... frankly, looking at his work here is no better than any director who's being asked to point and shoot and to deliver a competent but not particularly sort of interesting production. There is nothing he's done here that has any directorial flourish that anyone would look at this going, oh, look, it's another great Mark Waters joint. That's not the case at all. This is generic filmmaking at its most generic.
The exception that proves the rule is Mean Girls. It does have directorial flourish, and that comes from Tina Fey's script. So I would
no,
suggest that when he
that's
gets
not
the
directorial
right material,
flourish.
When he no, well, no, the film has flourishes from the director's point of view. When he gets the right material, he can add something to it. But he very much was slotted into the let's get a comedy out there. And when you start talking about things like Girls of He's All That and Girls of Ghosts of Girlfriends Past and stuff like that, he didn't have a lot to work with there. So I'm not surprised that he's gone down the Netflix Brooke Shields route at this point in his career.
Look, I think that we're largely looking at someone who is a fairly capable director who knows how to work a production, but I don't think we're looking at anyone particularly amazing. And look, when I think about Mean Girls, there's nothing about the direction in that film that really sort of speaks to me as being particularly that significant. It's all the Tina Fey script. It's all the casting.
Disagree, but anyway, that's fine. He's now at a point where he's taking the Netflix dollars for stuff like this, probably getting a trip to where was it shot, Thailand or Burma, or something like that. So
yeah, Burma. Like so many great rom coms of years gone past, they filmed in Burma.
So all right, well maybe there's something to see in this. I might have a look at it when the weather gets really cold and I'm just not going outdoors. I might stumble across this one. So it's called Mother of the Bride.
Sorry, just in terms of, I'd be remiss if we talked about Mark Waters as the director and not also mention Robin Bernheim, who's the credited screenwriter. Much like Mark Waters, she is very much a journeyman. She is the EP and I think writer of like the Princess Switch movies. She's got some experience working on Little House on the Prairie back in the day, Quantum Leap, Star Trek Voyager. But probably sort of, you know, as loosely a connection as we can get to anything like this one. Remington Steele was one of her big things back in the day. But, you know, certainly one of these sort of journeyman TV writers from throughout the years. But someone who's been around for years and years and years, kind of like Mark Waters.
Kind of like me. All right, well, Mother of the Bride on Netflix. Keen to see it. When I saw that in our running sheet, I thought, oh my God, Dan's not watching much television. So I'm keen to see how he makes 2 to 3 minutes out of Mother of the Bride, but you did good. You're a consummate professional, Dan Barrett, and thank you for a fun review. What are we talking
now,
about?
Now, before we throw to the next thing, okay, yes. We were talking just before we started about the idea that you're not reviewing the new movie If this week. Now, if people don't know the movie If, I would understand. If is a acronym for Imaginary Friend. It's the latest joint by John Krasinski and stars the guy from Two Guys, a Girl on a Pizza Place. I don't know what happened with that guy.
Right. Yeah. Imaginary friend. I thought it was Invisible Fart. No, maybe I got looking at the wrong movie.
No, I think you're just looking at the reviews. But Simon said, oh, I just had no interest in getting onto this one. And look, I think that's probably reasonable. Reviews haven't been particularly great. I don't know the movie's been sold in a particularly sort of interesting manner. But one of the things that I thought was probably worth looking at is loading up the Event Cinemas website, which is the biggest cinema chain in Australia, and seeing how much screen time they're dedicating to If. And it's not really a lot. Like, it's certainly got screen presence, but it's not on the big screens. Like, I can't see looking at...
You know how
I'm on a Saturday here. Sorry, let me just finish my thought here, Simon. I'm looking at a Saturday here, and at some of the biggest screen cinemas in Brisbane, Indooroopilly, Mount Gravatt, Pacific Fair, Robina, none of them have any VMAX screens given, so they're not being given the premium screens. They're being given it in Chermside and Carindale, but even then, not all the screens. But Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes has most of the premium screens still for the second week running, which bodes for a box office they're not really expecting to be particularly massive on If.
You know how I know that they're much more interested in If as a small screen film than a big screen film? Because nobody wanted to launch a major release 7 days out from Furiosa, which hits cinemas next week. So whatever's in cinemas next week is going to have to make way for the new Mad Max film. And I'm assuming that they're thinking they'll get a week of steady trade out of If with the family audience. And then it'll just be bundled off to one of the streamers, probably Disney. Oh, I'm not sure if he's got it. But it'll lose, as will Planet of the Apes next week, it'll start losing screens to Furiosa. So there's no long-term planning for If other than as a home viewing option for families. It will be my way of thinking.
It will. I've got this kind of vibe around Furiosa, though. Like, all the reviews for it have been really strong, but I kind of think it's going to underperform it. Oh, well, look, most of the reviews I've seen... Oh, actually, no, all the reviews I've seen have been very strong. I can't say I've seen every review. Okay,
well, you haven't seen mine yet, my friend, but I've got a big week next week. Don't you worry.
Yeah, right. I kind of think this film's going to underperform a bit. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like people are, like, crazy excited about it. And cuts that as well. Mad Max Fury Road, as much as film nerds loved it, and it certainly performed perfectly fine, it wasn't a massive blockbuster either. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how that one does.
Exactly right. Let's get on with this week's reviews, my friend, because I've got a couple to through.
Yeah, sorry, this is the part where I dilly-dally because I'm just not interested in either of these titles you got coming up. But
I can tell,
Simon,
yep.
Let's talk about this exciting film called The Way, My Way. Let's watch a clip and then tell us what it's about.
It all started on that holiday in Spain.
The Pilgrims.
Pilgrims.
Hey.
Need a lift, mate?
No, I'm in training.
Training?
Yeah, I'm going to walk the Camino de Santiago. It's an 800-kilometre pilgrim's walk in Spain.
I am hoping that after this Camino, I won't have to apologise for you anymore.
Are you Bill?
Yeah, I'm Balazs.
Balazs.
Nice to meet you.
Here comes Lassie, yeah.
Hi.
Oh, no, I don't hug. Oh.
I'm Rosa.
Oh.
Rosa. Home for the night?
Do I have a turndown service?
That's a joke.
The Way My Way is based on the best-selling memoir called Camino by filmmaker and writer Bill Bennett. Now, Bill Bennett is an Australian director who had some art house success back in the 80s and into the 90s with films like Kiss or Kill, In a Savage Land, movies that established him as a very, I guess you could say, idiosyncratic storyteller, someone who has a very specific, if not entirely commercial, point of view. He had a shot in Hollywood where he directed Two If by Sea, the Sandra Bullock movie with Dennis Leary, but came back to Australia and settled into a life over here directing some small screen stuff. He did The Nugget, the Eric Banner film from a few years ago, but largely hasn't been doing a lot of work. With what he instead did was head over to Spain, where he walked the Camino de Santiago, which is the famous 800-kilometer trek that is a pilgrimage for people from all over the world. They head to Spain, they walk this soul-enriching journey through the Spanish countryside and up and down the hills and mountains of beautiful sections of Spain, and along the way meet people doing the same thing and have some kind of, I guess you could say, epiphany about life. It brings life into focus. So this movie, The Way My Way, is a director, Bill Bennett, telling us about his journey on the Camino de Santiago. Chris Haywood plays Bennett in this film, the great Australian actor, Chris Haywood. It's great to see him on the big screen again doing work, particularly set against this stunning countryside. Having said that, and this is where there's a kind of an issue for me, it's a lot of walking, and it's a lot of walking through very beautiful scenery. And I know some of the biggest films of all time have featured walking, like Lord of the Rings, which is basically 6 hours of 9 hours of people just walking, or little people just walking. In this one, we see Chris Haywood meet people from all around the world, some of them real-life trekkers and some of them actors playing the part of real-life trekkers. Notable in the cast is Laura Lakshmi, who's a beautiful Dutch actress who offers some points of wisdom. Jennifer Clough, who is Bill Bennett's real-life wife, plays his wife in this movie. And key amongst the cast is Pia Thunderbolt, who plays a woman who is having her own dark issues and trying to get around life in a way that only the Camino de Santiago can offer. So this is a movie that is very, very much geared towards the more senior of our movie-going audience, an audience that is finding it very tough to regain the movie-going experience. I'm keen to see how The Way My Way does in cinemas. It's had a series of very well-attended Q&A events leading up to its limited release, but I guess maybe wider release than you'd expect for something like this. So if audiences can get out and see this one, it would show a lot of support for an independent Australian film. This one was made outside the major funding bodies. And it's just not the sort of film that not only do we not see that much in cinemas, that doesn't even get made anymore. Very much geared towards the older audience, and very much a film that will be appreciated by those who are going through a more soulful period in their life. Let's say that. So it's called The Way My Way, and in limited release through Maslow Entertainment.
Okay. I might just go and watch Slacker instead.
I don't want that into it. Oh, sure. Why not?
Well, the indie film about the guy that just walks around meeting people.
Slacker? Yeah, what, the old Richard Linklater one? I haven't seen that for 1,000 years. Really? Okay. All right. I'll have to watch that again. I don't remember that at all. I remember the t-shirt.
Okay. Simon Foster, for some reason you want to talk about season 26 of Doctor Who. Let's go.
Give me the loving!
Where did he come from?
I don't know, he sort of popped up at the right moment. And then he spoke about time travel.
Ruby,
you want to know my secret?
I have the whole universe at my fingertips.
And I'm all on my own. I'd love it if you came with me.
Who are you?
I'm the Doctor.
Tell me, change me!
It's called the TARDIS. It's a time and space machine.
Is it safe?
No idea.
Yes, I do want to talk very briefly about Doctor Who.
Season 26 of Doctor Who. Let's use the correct nomenclature.
All right, season 26 of Doctor Who. Let's talk about that. There was a certain degree of poo-pooing from my podcast partner with regards to my idea of talking about Doctor Who. We'll address that in a moment. I just want to say that I'm not a Whovian at all. I think over the course of those 25 previous seasons of Doctor Who, I've maybe seen 10 episodes of it. Most of those were Tom Baker. Some of those were Jodie Whittaker. I think I watched one of the movies years and years ago, the old John Pertwee things, but I'm not a Doctor Who fan at all. So to come to this one based on some of the, I know you'll turn your nose up at the word buzz, but there was a certain amount of buzz when Nkuti Gatwa was cast as the Doctor Who. the first African American, or the first African.
To interrupt briefly, I think there was a lot of buzz about his casting. I think there's not a lot of buzz about the launch of the program, which is where my distinction on it is.
Okay. All right. We'll get back to that. And I did not see the Christmas special or the Christmas released episode that came out earlier. I see. So I'm literally coming to this series as the episodes drop. Three episodes in, it is, I find, a great adventure story. It is a beautiful looking piece of television. The casting of Millie Rogers as the Doctor's offsider and of Nkuti Gatwa as the Doctor proves to be an absolute masterstroke. They are terrific together. The fact that, and sexual tension hasn't always been primary to the roles, to these roles over the years, but it's played kind of a part. There's none of that in this. These are like two friends who are connecting on the level of a friendship, and the adventures that they go on against some of these really spectacularly imagined alien creatures and vast worlds is just so much fun to watch. And it's really fast paced too. It's a pacey action adventure series with a lot of humor. I know a lot of the complaints, or some of the complaints, are that it's been quote unquote Disney-fied. I'm not quite sure what that means, but if it's helped the series find a breath of fresh air and makes for an enjoyable watching experience, which it has for me, then I guess I'm all for that. They haven't really handled a lot of YA material particularly well, and I'm thinking of things like Percy Jackson recently and a couple of other properties that they picked up and have stumbled badly with. But with Doctor Who, they've found a winning formula, and Russell T Davies as the showrunner has proven to be quite the genius in the way he's put this new look show together. So just ticks all around for me for the casting and the adventures that the Doctor providing in the 26th season of Doctor Who.
Okay, cool. Well, you really justified the use of that segment, Simon. I'm very happy we did that.
I really, really did.
Well, that's our reviews for the week. Simon Foster, let's move on to our weekly intermission.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's intermission time.
Simon Foster, the winds, they are a-blowing. There is change about. And boy, can you feel it in no more a venue than the United States television market upfronts. Okay, so it's 2024. Do we need to explain what upfronts are at this point? We probably do.
Very briefly, let's just run through for some of the people, because it's a term that's been around for a long time, but in 25 words or less, what's an upfront?
Upfront is basically once a year, and this is like an old school TV thing they've been doing, you know, since there's been TV. Sure. Basically, the TV networks would choose one week where on one day NBC would present, the next day ABC, CBS, whatever, Fox, I guess, CW, that all choose a day or a morning or an afternoon. And that stage, some sort of large live-ish event, media would be invited to it. But the main audience for it are media buyers. These are the large firms that spend a lot of money with the TV networks, tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars from each of these media buying firms. And they all send their various representatives to see a presentation and be wined and dined by the TV networks as they sell their wares for what the next TV season is going to be.
Have you ever attended an upfront?
What's that, sorry?
Have you ever attended a version here or in the US of an upfront?
Yeah, I've been to quite a few of them. We'll talk about that in just a second. But largely around this time of the year is where you hear about TV shows being cancelled or renewed. The reason for that is because it's during this week they announced their lineup for the next US TV season, which is usually September through to May. And so at this point, they'll be like, oh, you know, we've got these exciting programs coming. And so from this week of May, what used to happen was that all the shows that have been picked up for a new season that have a few weeks off because it's the end of the year. And so, you know, people have to charge their batteries. But then like about a month away from now is when TV shows would either re-enter production or enter production. So if you've been cancelled, basically, you know, long-term holiday, unless you've picked up a new pilot or something. But largely shows at this point are either cancelled or not. And that's why it's usually a really heavy period for TV news. But the last, I don't know, we'll say 5 years, they've been very quiet from the TV network front, because if you're CBS, you're not so much worried about launching a whole bunch of new TV shows anymore. Instead, you're just sort of saying, hey, what about a spinoff of the FBI franchise, which I think is on CBS, or maybe Chicago Fire. It's basically franchise extensions these days. So there's a new Chicago program, there's a new Law and Order program, there'll be a new NCIS. And so they've been stripping these across. Like in the US, you can turn on a TV channel on, you know, let's say it's a Wednesday night, and you'll see three different versions of FBI, all one after the other.
Of course. Okay. So upfronts aren't as important nowadays as they once were.
Absolutely.
And they're expensive. Yeah.
They spend a lot of money on these things. Okay. And if you looked at the news coverage around the upfronts for the networks this year, like it was just pretty much non-existent. It was basically like, oh, there's a schedule, you know, whatever. Because all the excitement these days, Simon, is around the streaming services. Because this is the first year that Netflix held an upfront event with the rest of the guys, that Amazon Prime Video held an upfront event.
Wow. Okay. So this is a real shot across the bow. Another shot across the bow from the streaming services to say, hey, traditional network television, you're done. You're gone.
Look, absolutely. So, Simon, what I thought we'd do for this segment is I'm just going to run through a couple of the highlighted things that have been flagged. And I just wanted to gauge where your interest is in it.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, let's talk about Netflix first. So Netflix... the reason why they're talking to advertisers now and haven't done previously is because previously they didn't have advertising. You could
That's
do
an
some,
important part of it. Yep.
Yeah. You could do some product integrations into Netflix programs, but you couldn't really buy ads. And so they're very much selling Netflix as a platform which doesn't have the most number of advertiser subscribers. They are touting like 40 million, but that's just people that might be watching like Netflix accounts in a household. It's like 19 million accounts have advertising switched on for it. So if you think about the 270 million accounts that Netflix have, it's obviously not even at half at this point is still advertising supported, but that'll change over the years or whatever. But anyway, Simon, let's talk about some of the product. So okay. One of the big things they said is coming into production soon, a movie called Happy Gilmore 2.
Tick.
Tick, you're in for that.
Kind of excited, mostly because Adam Sandler's been given a bit of a blank check to do his stuff on Netflix, and it's, most of it's working quite well, certainly for the fans and people are watching. So I'm on board. It feels like IP regurgitation, but some IP regurgitation is worth lapping up.
Yeah, look, I'm not sure that I need to see another Happy Gilmore story, but also of all those mid-90s Adam Sandler films that became VHS classics, Happy Gilmore was the one that I probably liked the most of those. So look, I'll watch this. Three Body Problems being ordered for more episodes. What we don't know, though, is whether that's several seasons worth of more episodes or if it's like four episodes. So, you know, right. TBA, but are you enthused to see the show come back?
Gee, I was before it came out. I got like four episodes in and I found it all a bit of turgid and tapped out. So, no, I've got no interest in this. I can see why advertisers do, because it has a very loyal following, but no, not for me.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a loyal following. I mean, people suddenly watched it and had middling to mostly positive reviews, but, you know, from the couple I saw, it was fine.
Yeah.
Will Ferrell's going to be starring in a new Netflix series called Golf. He's going to be doing that opposite Rami Youssef. And, you know, it's a golf comedy coming to Netflix.
Rami Youssef, yes, very excited about. Will Ferrell, he's a legacy star now, and I tend to sort of tune in to see what he's up to. Golf, well, if it's not Happy Gilmore, then I'm not that excited, but I'll give it a go.
Yeah, it's actually one of two different golf series that's launching sometime soon. So Will Ferrell and Rami Youssef doing that one. And then over on Apple TV.
Are they bringing
Plus
Holy Moly back?
Tragically not.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Oh, actually, I think Holy Moly might still be going in the US, maybe.
Wow.
But the Australian version is not coming back, so I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know if the Holy Moly set that they constructed in Brisbane, which was the set they used for the Australian Holy Moly, as well as a number of the international Holy Molies, I don't know if that's still in place. But anyway, I can do some research on that one.
That's but good use of money.
There is another...
just farming out your Holy Moly set to different nations to film their Holy Moly series. I reckon if we really try, we could hit 100 Holy Molies by the end of this podcast episode.
Look, maybe. But that's actually a pretty common practice with a lot of these big event reality shows. So the various wipeouts from around the world were all shot on the same wipeout soundstage set. It's an outdoor set.
That's interesting.
Where was that? It was in Indonesia, I think, or somewhere like that. The Wall, which was a, I think, trivia studio-based show, the actual production costs of constructing one of those walls was so large that the wall that actually flew people to the Netherlands to do that. You're seeing things like Jeopardy! Australia is not actually filmed in Australia with Stephen Fry. Instead, they just found expats living in the UK that are the Jeopardy! Australia contestants. So Jeopardy! Australia is neither filmed in Australia nor hosted by an Australian, which I think is...
What was the show that your mate and I, Nick Bassin, did that was filmed out here for US television? He did one of those, didn't he?
Yeah, so that is the... Oh, gosh, what is the name of the show?
Oh, I have to get back to that one. Hi, Nick.
Can't Stop the Hits? That's not right. It was that musical competition game show for Fox.
Don't Forget the Lyrics or something like that?
No, that's a different one.
Different one. Anyway, hi, Nick.
I forget it. But all right, that was interesting because... That one was because of COVID times. So they actually filmed this American game show in Australia using expat American contestants, okay, in order to be able to produce something while there were COVID shutdowns in the US and Australia was open for production. So that's why that happened. Yeah. But
and
anyway,
Nick,
I was going to say Simon.
A shameless self-promoter, jumped all over that. Hey, Nick, if you're listening.
Yeah. Actually, did you know I'm responsible for that?
What?
So it was me that told Nick, hey, Nick, there's this game show. Go and do this. And he looked at it and went for it. And yeah, he won himself enough money to put a deposit down on a possible house.
Wonderful. And spend that time writing his book.
Yeah.
That book, I got to say, I almost finished it. It's terrific.
You know what? I've got the book sitting on my shelf and I look at it on a daily basis saying I need to start reading this one. But, you know, reading, it's so tough. Look, I'm sure it's
anyway,
good.
Anyway, up front.
Okay, reviews next week. It's not the only golf show that's coming because Apple TV Plus have a golf show starring Owen Wilson and Mark Maron coming sometime soon as well. So it's going to be a very golf-heavy TV comedy season coming soon. Okay, let me throw this one at you. Kevin Williamson, creator of Dawson's Creek, and I guess the Scream movies, has a North Carolina set family drama called The Waterfront.
Assuming it'll tap into that Dawson's Creek vibe, maybe I'm interested, although Dawson's Creek was a very long time ago to me. But yeah, maybe if there's nothing else on.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like Dawson's Creek was so long ago. I kind of think it's going to play a bit older than Dawson's Creek. It'll probably play to the same age group that are now, sort of aged up.
Well, they bring back James Vanderbeek. Because if they bring back James Vanderbeek, I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, he's crucial to so many productions. Tim McGraw, the country star, is going to be starring in a new bull riding drama. Now, I'm going to take the lead on this one. This is actually a bit more interesting to me because he was the lead of 1883 and he was really good in it. So I'd actually be pretty keen to check out that. But I don't think you saw 1883, so that's neither here nor
there.
Well,
the last good bull riding movie I saw was 9 Seconds with the late, great Luke Perry. So it's been a while between bull riding project.
Simon, sorry, what was that film called?
9 Seconds?
Incorrect. It's called 8 Seconds. Jeez, Simon. Oh. I'm going to find a new movie guy for this podcast.
That was the highly anticipated sequel, 9 Seconds. Anyway, go
ahead. Yeah, sure. Two other things I'm going to throw at you. Catherine Bigelow is making a movie for Netflix. It's her first film since Detroit, which was about 8 years ago now.
Yeah, which was a big flop and a pretty bad film, but I'm still a big Catherine Bigelow fan, so yes, I'm on board for anything she does.
You know what? I don't think it's a bad movie at all. I think I probably respect the movie more than I liked it, but it's a film that's definitely stayed with me all of this time. I've never forgotten that film, which I think is...
You see like 10 movies a year. Of course it did.
Excuse me, I probably see about 30 movies a year. Thank you very much.
Yeah, one of them was Mother of the Bride. Do go on.
Yep. Review on Letterboxd, 1.5 stars. And this is probably the big thing, Simon. Netflix, which always said they were never going to do sports, are absolutely gearing up to do sports. And they've announced a deal with the NFL to stream 2 different NFL games on Christmas Day globally.
Wow. That is a big deal.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
But Christmas, hang on, how are they going to do that? Christmas Day is different around the world. They can't have one game. What are they going to do, repeat it?
Well, no, they'll have
Boxing
two games.
It'll be Boxing Day here in Australia by the time it's Christmas Day in America when they play the game.
Yeah, that's fine. It doesn't have to be on Christmas Day to watch it. It's okay. This is a thing where what I think is interesting about this is that the NFL is obviously huge in the US and I don't think has a lot of buy-in from anyone outside of the US. There's certainly NFL fans around the world, okay, but I don't know it's necessarily particularly that huge. But maybe this is the entry point to that becoming a really big TV event. The NFL is famously a sport that was created very much for TV consumption, okay, or at least the reason why that game really took off is because of TV. It's very TV friendly. It's a square-based field that they play on, and you know everything about the structure of it is made for TV. This could be the thing that actually makes it a bit more of a global phenomenon. So interesting to watch that. I'm going to throw you a couple of Amazon Prime Video things, Simon, really quickly.
Okay.
A prequel to Legally Blonde called Elle.
Featuring Reese Witherspoon in any way whatsoever.
Her name will be on the credits.
She'll get an executive producer. I'm keen to see who they cast as Elle in the lead role. If they can capture somebody who's a breakout star in the way that Reese Witherspoon was, I'm all for it. I'll give it a look. IP regurgitation #, but let's give it a go.
Yeah, it seems very casting dependent. This gives me Clueless the TV series vibes, but you know, we'll see.
Yes, which isn't good.
Yeah. Live action Tomb Raider TV show from Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
I kind of think her ship sailed a little bit in terms of buzz, but she'll bring a comedic edge to it. Is she playing Lara Croft? Is that
no,
the
buzz? She's too old to play Lara Croft.
Still, I'd watch that.
I mean, Phoebe Waller-Bridge could be in her early to mid-40s at this point.
Oh my God, that is old. I won't be watching that. No interest in Lara Croft or Tomb Raider with anyone involved.
You know, I didn't mind the last Tomb Raider film that got made with, what's her name, from Ex Machina, whose name
is that. And I was a fan of the Yann de Bont sequel to the original film. I quite thought that was pretty cool. But I think it's kind of had it's just not sticking with it. It can't stick the landing is what I'm trying to say here. So, no.
Alicia Vikander. Yeah.
Yeah,
there's going to be a spin-off of Jeopardy called Pop Culture Jeopardy, and it's going to shift up the format a little bit to not be three people competing, but rather teams of players, all using the Jeopardy game mechanics to do pop culture trivia.
Could care less about it, and we'll certainly be watching it.
Yeah, I will 100% be watching it, and 100% probably dismiss it as soon as I've watched it, but I'm interested. Sequel to Roadhouse.
No. Get why they're doing it. Not interested.
Yes. I'm all for it. And that film did very well for them. Doug Liman.
Oh, no, I absolutely get why they're doing it. Is JG coming back? Is Jake going to bump up again to play the role?
Gyllenhaal's back. No word on Doug Liman, who was very upset that it went straight to streaming, even though that's exactly what he signed up for and got paid for. But that's neither here. Nor there, which is the fourth time I've said that, so drink. Nicolas Cage will be playing Spider-Man Noir in a live-action TV series.
Tick, 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 tick. Yes, I'm all over that.
What else was there? There was something else from Amazon, which I think I've sort of skipped past somewhere, but it doesn't matter. But anyway, like you can kind of see here, like these are the streamers coming out here with some very big names, some very big TV events. And when you look at the idea of this, what Amazon and Netflix are doing versus, hey, here's a new extension of NCIS where you get to see Gibbs as a young man. Like, you know, that's probably the most exciting network show that got announced, which is just really sad.
So the upfronts are back. They disappeared for a while, not just because of COVID, didn't they? They were scaled down in size, at least in recent times. But now the network's going to have to stand. They're going to have to stand up if Netflix and Amazon are now getting into this traditional ad selling format of taking their new shows to the advertisers. Surely the big networks will have to sort of re-enter the fray and say, "Oh, anything you can do, we can try to do better."
Yeah, they really just sort of talk about reach at this point. It's difficult. So broadcast TV is skewing older and older because younger audiences just aren't watching linear broadcast TV in the way that they once did. So networks, this is why you see 3 hours of FBI back to back, because the audience are older and are perfectly willing to stick around with that kind of thing because that's just what they like. Attracting audiences with new, fresh, big things, it's not really a thing that's happening on broadcast networks anymore.
All right. Okay. So, well, I've got to say, Dan Barrett, for an intermission segment that had no planning and we really didn't know what we were going to do until like literally 10 seconds before going to where that came together quite well. Well done.
Yeah, it was fine.
It was fine. Shall we roll on to what else have you been watching?
Okay, Simon, I guess the question that is on everybody's lips is, what have you been watching?
All right, I'm going to zing through these because actually it's an interesting bunch of films. Also in cinemas this week is The Three Musketeers, D'Artagnan. Now, this is a very lavish, very big budget French movie that stars a whole lot of people who you'd be very familiar with if you are a fan of French cinema. Let me run names by you like Romain Duris, Vincent Cassel, one Eva Green, who's playing Milady, a very wicked woman, Vicky Creeps, who's in there, who we know from so many good films, and Lena Kudry, who plays Constance Bonachoux. These are all major French stars who are turning up for what is, I believe, a three-part. I may be corrected there.
Two-parter
of the Three Musketeers stories. For someone, I've got a real affinity for the Three Musketeers films. I remember seeing the Richard Chamberlain version many, many years ago. Michael York was in that as well. And then, of course, who'll ever forget the version starring Oliver Platt and Charlie Sheen, which was for a generation the most famous of the Three Musketeers films. Who was the other one then? Chris O'Donnell. And I can't remember who the other one was. I think it was
Oliver Platt.
Shelley Winters. Who?
Oliver Platt was in those.
Yeah, Oliver Platt, yeah. But this one is given a very serious, very lavish production in cinemas now through Palace Films, so you know it's going to be French. The real standout star here is Eva Green as Milady, and it's her character that takes focus in the second film, which I think is just around the corner in terms of it getting a release here in Australia. So if you love your big period epics, your big costume dramas, your swashbuckling, get along to see The Three Musketeers. We know after centuries and centuries of adaptations and reading the books that it's a great way to spend a couple of hours. And this is a great way to spend a couple of hours. I'm going to run through mine very quickly here, Dan.
Well, sorry, I was going to very quickly say the two films were very modestly budgeted, but they were filmed back to back to try to extract as much money out of it as possible, as much production value out of it as possible. But yeah, I'm also super keen to check these out. So I might see if I can get along to one early next week.
Did you have much fondness for the Charlie Sheen version?
Look, I mean, obviously, but look, as a man of literature, I quite like the original book from Mr. Dumas.
Oh, wow, look at you. Mm. Coming to Netflix, actually, as we record this, just debuted on Netflix, is a documentary called Power. Now, this is a film that tracks the rise of militaristic methodology used in the American police force and the origins of attitudes that still pervade the US policing system. As an avid documentary watcher, I've seen quite a few of these films that position the American police force as a sidearm, as a, no pun intended, of big business, white supremacy, upper class American society, white people basically, and how it impacts the African American, Latino communities in the US. This is quite an academic film. There's a lot of talking heads in this, but they've got some really powerful and interesting things to say. It's a film that certainly does rattle the cage in terms of how we've allowed police to pretty much police themselves. There's no overarching legislation either on a state or federal position in the US that tracks what the police do or keeps them in some kind of check with regards to their actions or use of force, and that's now reaching a boiling point, and has for some time. Power is a really disturbing and, as the title suggests, powerful documentary. It debuts on Netflix after after a festival run late last year. And the other movie and the other TV show that I watched on Netflix this week is this really cute and funny little sort of murder mystery type thing called Bodkin, which is the new Will Forte film. He plays a podcaster who turns up in the small Irish town of Bodkin to recount for his true crime podcast a 20-year-old multiple murder. Along for the ride is Siobhan Cullen as a British journalist as an Irish journalist who's been kicked out of London while an investigation into her actions is undergoing. And they make this very odd couple pairing who suddenly find that this small town is full of dark secrets. There's a great chemistry between the three leads. There's another young lady whose name I'm going to get right, Robin Cara. She plays Emmy, and she plays a Will Forte's offsider, a young researcher. And the chemistry between these three is great. The local flavour in the Irish small town is also terrific. Lots of humour. Second episode stumbles a little bit, but by the third episode, I was still giggling and getting into the mystery of it. So this is a really easy and a really enjoyable watch. Will Forte continues to be one of Hollywood's most likable and engaging on-screen performers, and Siobhan Cullen as Dove is terrific opposite him. So Bodkin is on your Netflix right now.
Yeah, I've seen the first two episodes of it. I thought it was fine. I didn't find it that charming. Also, I don't really like Will Forte, so, you know, just putting that out there.
Jeez.
You know.
I love my Will Forte.
Yeah, well, you know, doesn't mean you're right. Hey, a couple of things I've been sort of burning through of late. John Mulaney, Everyone in LA. This was the live-streamed talk show that's like the sort of late-night style talk show that John Mulaney was doing for Netflix. There were six installments of it, and I thought this was an absolute delight for a couple of reasons. One, it was live. The problem with a lot of these late-night TV programs is they're all pre-recorded, and it just loses a sense of energy and a little bit of currency and value
totally
to it.
Totally agree.
Even if you're watching this, after the live events, you can still feel as though there's just an energy. The fact that they know they're going out live, there's an element of danger is probably not quite the right word, but there is a sense that anything could go a little bit wrong. And you also get a sense that things aren't necessarily being edited out. So probably the standout episode is the one with David Letterman appearing on it. And there's a comedian who, I think her name is like Luann or Luell or something like that. I didn't really know her. She apparently plays Vegas a fair bit. But anyway, she comes out and has like maybe about like 3 or 4 minutes where she completely owns the stage and she's hilarious and everybody is very much with her. Okay, she doesn't sort of take that idea that, you know, once you've, you know, hit the room, you want to get out as quickly as possible. She should have, by all rights, probably retreated into the background a little bit from the conversation and just traded off that for the next couple of years, because I think she made herself a star in that moment. But then she kind of just let it keep on going. But what was great is that on any other talk show, they probably would have edited out some of the segments with her later on. But she just kept on going at her, and she was sitting next to Dave Letterman, which I think was a bit of a thrill for her. And it just felt very human in a way that you just don't see from these programs because they are so tightly edited and pre-planned out. So
is Mulaney? Mulaney gearing up, given his appearance on the Oscars this year and his bit about Field of Dreams? Is he sort of firming as a potential, if not an Oscar show host, and an award show host in the years to come?
Look, if he's not hosting the Oscars next year, I'd be very, very surprised.
That but anyway, feels let's, like it, yeah.
Yeah, let's see. But anyway, Mulaney, this is a 6-episode engagement. I'm not talking about it coming back, but I do hope it comes back in some form because it was fantastic. Also, really, really lavish sets. You watch something like, actually, any of them really, except for Colbert. Colbert, they spent a lot of money doing that refurb on the Ed Sullivan Theatre. But watch any of the rest of them, and they all feel very sort of cheap and nasty. This was a big, expensive-looking, lavish set. But even though it was big and lavish-looking, it doesn't necessarily mean that it was, like, sort of overly opulent to the point of distraction. Rather, it felt very sort of comforting and warm, and it was one of those great late night sets. I really like it, and I encourage people to give it a bit of a look, even if they're not entirely into it. Oh, and Richard Kind's the announcer on it. Like, you don't get better than that. The last couple of weeks, I've been talking about my rewatch of Evil. I finished that up now. I'm now primed for the show when it returns back next week. So guess what I'm going to be talking about a week or so away from now on the podcast. Strap yourself in. If somebody can talk about season 26 of Doctor Who, a kids TV program, I'm going to talk about something for grown-ups, Simon.
But anyway. You are going to get, Dan Barrett, you are going to get emails from the legion of Doctor Who fans who do not think it's a kids TV show. And I just want to put that out there that I'm on the side of the Doctor Who fans, and please direct your emails to one dan.barrett. I won't give out your email address, but do go
on. No, it's dan@alwaysbewatching.com. Hit me up, people. Hit me up. Reality is, if you read the Always Be Watching newsletter, for the last however many years I've been doing it, anytime I talk about Doctor Who, I will refer to it as a kids' TV program, and I hear from people every time I do it. It's fantastic. It feeds me. It's like wrestling.
How many people have you heard from with regards to Evil?
More than you'd think, but less than I'd like.
All right, so what else have you been watching?
Okay, the other thing I just wanted to throw out to was... There was a lot of talk from me and other people about the return of Jon Stewart's The Daily Show. What has been fascinating about the return of Jon Stewart's The Daily Show from a business perspective is that for the rest of the week, the ratings have been up for that as well. So everybody has come back to watch The Daily Show. It's like viewership is like, you know, about 15 times what it was while Trevor Noah was hosting it. Okay. But, and so that's just for the Jon Stewart episodes. While the viewership isn't as high for the rest of the week, it's still up dramatically from what it was doing. And one of the reasons why I think it's doing so well is that the current crop of correspondents they've got on there are all really, 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 really good. You've got Jordan Klepper, Ronnie Chang, Michael Costa, Desi. What's that, sorry?
Ronnie Chang is very, very funny. And the ads that he does for Uber are also very, very funny.
No, they're all really, really funny, which is kind of what's particularly notable and why I just wanted to talk about it. Also, Desi Littick, who is the blonde sort of bubbly voice lady on it, she is the best of the lot of them. She is absolutely incredible. She's hosted it this past week and legitimate laugh out loud joke. She's got a perspective which is entirely different to any other late night show host that you've seen or any of the rest of the group. When you're watching the group, you can kind of see Jordan Klepper and Michael Costa, and they kind of cover very sort of similar ground. Ronnie Cheng's not that far removed from either of them either, but she's just entirely different with her approach and just the things that she's interested in. Like, it's a very different show when she's hosting it, and I've been enjoying the heck out of it this past week. But when your weakest of the group is Michael Costa, like, you're onto a winner, because even though Michael Costa's the weakest, he's still really, really good. This is the best the show has been in probably 20-odd years, and that includes, like, when Old Mate was hosting it previously. Like, it is on such a good run at the moment. If you're not watching The Daily Show on a daily basis, like, you really are missing out. Now, each week on the show, we do like to have a little bit of a trivia quiz. Simon Foster gets out the pen and paper and does his web research. I'm not sure how well researched it is, but he sits down, he throws some questions at me each and every week, and let's give it a go. First of all, let's kick off with This Week in History.
That's right, Dan Barrett. It's This Week in History. The late, great Burt Lancaster is seen on screen for the last time with the premiere of this film on this day, May 20, 1989. And in true Jimmy Carr style, I literally just told you the answer. So, late, great Burt Lancaster is seen on screen for the last time with the premiere of which film on May 20, 1989?
Well, the good thing was I wasn't listening to what you had to say then, but... Look, I'm pretty certain that the film's going to be Field of Dreams, which, just as a bit of a side trivia point, between the last time I watched Field of Dreams and the next time I watched Field of Dreams, which I think will be soon, I hadn't actually watched any Burt Lancaster films. But in that time, I've actually watched a lot of Burt Lancaster films, and I really, really like him. So is the answer Burt Lancaster? And if the answer is yes, I plan to watch this film soon.
No, the answer is Field of Dreams, and it did star Burt Lancaster as one Shoeless Joe Jackson. And yes, love this film. Watch it kind of regularly. This is a bit like my It's a Wonderful Life. I love going back to Field of Dreams. It's a movie that has a lot of charm and heart to it that I find energizing. May 24th.
Michael Schur, the guy who co-created Parks and Recreation and has, you know, done a whole bunch of other TV shows since, he was running a Field of Dreams TV series remake. He's a mad keen baseball fan. And the thing with Field of Dreams, it's a very earnest film, and he is not a man who's afraid of earnestness. But for some reason, Peacock decided not to continue on with the series, and so they've dropped it, and it's just gone now.
I give Peacock the bird for doing that. That's a bad decision.
Justified.
May 24th, 1895, a gentleman named Henry Irving makes regal history as the first actor to receive what?
Oh, if it's regal history, it'll be like a knighthood.
You've done very well, Dan Barrett. So Henry Irving, who sadly passed away not long after the award, the knighthood was given, 13th of October 1905. He ran the West End's Lyceum Theatre, became quite the celebration of high society in his day. I also realise now that that question has nothing to do with screen watching because no screens had been invented back then. So I do apologise for that. And finally, May 25, 2011, who ends her self-titled show after a 25-year run as the queen of daytime television?
Yeah, which is incredible because television was only begun in 2005, so it's really fairly good. Look, I mean, Ricky Lake was off the air by this point, so it's probably Oprah.
Ricky Lake. Oprah Gail Winfrey. Yes, it was one. Oprah Winfrey, the Chicago-based queen of all media, became one of the most influential women in the world at the time by the mid-2000s. It was an incredible sort of legacy she has left behind.
We all know why she became so big sort of during that latter period. It's because Ricky Lake had finished up.
Oh, God, yeah, exactly. That's why. You know what? I'd like to talk about birthdays. It's the birthday quiz.
Look, you might want to talk about birthdays, but I just need to give a bit of a go, Ricky, go, Ricky, Ricky.
Jeez, everyone gets a car.
No, not happy birthday. No, not that. Please, no. Not happy birthday.
All right, I think this is a bit of a tough one, and it may be a tough one for you to get. Here are four gentlemen. This could be the whitest birthday quiz I've ever done. Look at these faces. Go to our Facebook page to see the birthday quiz or our YouTube channel. May 19, 1944, a gentleman named Peter Mayhew. Now, that's going to be your entry point for the answer, I think. May 22, 1907, Laurence Olivier was born, the great actor, some would say ham, but also did some amazing work. May 24, 1965, John C. Reilly, and May 25, 1963, funny man Mike Myers. Now, what do these four birthday buddies all have in common? No clues. I'm going to make you have a guess. Peter Mayhew is definitely your in point.
Well, see, this is the thing. I know who Peter Mayhew is, but I can't connect Peter Mayhew to the other people. So Peter Mayhew famously played Chewbacca.
He did.
Okay, and not really much else. So that's, you know, as far as an entry point is. So it's like, what has Peter Mayhew and the rest got in common? Yes. Like, obviously, if we're thinking about Olivier and Mike Myers, like, I can't actually remember if Mike Myers is British, but, like, his father's definitely British. Like, there's a British connection, but John C. Reilly's not British. Peter Mayhew's very tall, but I wouldn't think that Mike Myers is very tall, so that's not really likely a thing. I can't think of any roles where the only dialogue all four of these men would have given would be something along the lines of
Chewbacca ever.
Have they all played chess on screen before? Not too sure. Chess. Like, I'm really stuck. I can't work out what the connection is.
I thought this one might stump you. Peter Mayhew was, of course, most famous as Chewbacca, in which he was completely covered in full body practical makeup effects. Now, if we go through them, Laurence Olivier, I'm going to come back to him because it's a little controversial. John C. Reilly had a full body makeup suit on to play Oliver Hardy in the film Stan and Ollie opposite one Rob Brydon. Mike Myers most famously played a whole lot of characters under makeup, but the full body makeup character he played was Fat Bastard in the Austin Powers films. And Laurence Olivier was covered head to toe in black makeup to play Othello in his adaptation of Shakespeare's Othello. So full body makeup, full body prosthetics, and full body makeup is the answer to this fascinating birthday quiz.
I mean, I hear lots of words like fascinating, and well, actually, that's the only word I've really got a quibble with here.
Full body makeup. That's a good one. It was a tough week this week.
Also, it was not really makeup that Peter Mayhew had. It was a costume.
It was full body makeup. FBM to those in the industry. I just made that up. Okay.
I'm calling shenanigans on that entire quiz. But anyway, yeah. Simon, let's wrap this podcast up. Folks, this has been Screen Watching. Simon, do you want to let people know how they can engage with the Screen Watching podcast, but also how they can engage with you, you magical little butterfly?
Thank you, darling. Yes, well, my website is screen-space.net, where I do an awful lot of writing occasionally. You can engage with the Screen Watching socials on Facebook at Screen Watching Podcast, on Threads and YouTube at Screen Watching. I really got to get back on Threads. I'm not doing much there. But there's lots over on our YouTube channel. Or you can email us at screenwatchingpodcast@gmail.com, where we get lots of fascinating emails from you, interesting and intelligent people. Dan, what do you do when you're not doing this podcast?
Oh, look, so many things, so many things. Mm-hmm. I've stopped watching Evil, so, you know, I've got a week before that comes back. The other stuff I do is each day I send out a newsletter. It's called Always Be Watching. Find it at alwaysbewatching.com. It's got the big TV streaming stories. It's got things about video games and VR and anything you're using a screen for, really. Cover it in the newsletter. And then on Fridays, I send out a bonus newsletter called Always Be Streaming. And that one's kind of like your TV guide to the streaming week that was. So it's got all the new shows, the returning programs, and the movies as well that debuted on the streaming services. It hasn't come out yet this week, but I hope to rectify that later today. It's been a complicated week.
Yeah, you've had a busy week, and I do appreciate you giving time over to this podcast, because I know you've got a hell of a lot going on up there in Brisbane. Why don't you run through all those Brisbane suburbs like you did earlier in the podcast? That was fun.
Well, first we can start with Mount Gravatt, and then we can move down to Salisbury. I can take a bit of a detour over to Sunnybank and McGregor.
I'm out of here. Bye, everyone.
Folks, this has been Screen Watching. We'll be back next week as we explore Brisbane's south side, and then I'll explain how the difference of Brisbane works with the geography, the topography as well, and how the relationship between the river and the suburbs has been one of the defining factors of the growth of Brisbane as a...
Bye, everybody. See you.
Folks, we'll be back next week.